I began to wonder if the Thomas Weltons of the world had entirely disappeared. And it turns out that the Thomas Weltons of the world have largely disappeared, at least from the Academy, except for a few rare exceptions. When I mentioned this interest of mine to a professor here at Stanford, he pointed me to Princeton, specifically to the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Laboratories. In January of 2008, I flew to Princeton to interview Barbara Dunn and Robert John, the founders of the Pear Laboratories. Pear started its research in June of 1979, when one of John's students set up a random number generating machine. I'll let Brenda explain.
Bob got involved in this program through supervising an undergraduate independent project in engineering that involved the design and construction of a random number generator and carrying out some experiments to see if a human consciousness could affect its outcome. I got involved in the field when I was a grad student at the University of Chicago, and I was looking at a phenomenon we called remote perception, where people attempted to describe remote geographical scenes that they had no sensory access to. And those two components, the human-machine REG, or random event generator experiments, and the remote perception, really became the two main empirical bases of the Pear Laboratory over the years.
So their small laboratory was carved out of a storage area in the basement of the engineering complex at Princeton. And Robert John was then the dean of the engineering school and worked in the field of advanced aerospace propulsion, rocket science. The aim of their research was to study the interaction of human consciousness with various types of random physical systems and processes. And their research questions were, what is the role of consciousness in the physical world? And can we do science on this troublesome topic? So, what does one of the Pear experiments look like? The machine that Pear used most often was a random number generator. This machine is essentially an automatic coin flipper. It's a little box with a noise diode inside, which produces a broad spectrum of white noise, and transforms that noise into a series of random numbers. Its output is random, so it will produce a range of results, but they should average out to be 100. When a person comes into the lab, they're sat in front of this machine. And before the experiment begins, the operator is given a pre-stated intention to keep in mind. The operator focuses on trying to shift the average of the output to the positive side or to the negative side. And the operator's intention is pre-recorded, and all other variables are held constant. Only the operator's intention is changed in each trial. And during a trial, the machine generates 50 random numbers. And after many trials, theory would predict that the average of those numbers would be really close to 100. But when an operator sat in front of the machine thinking high, 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 or low, 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 the machine began to produce results that were a little bit different from what theory would predict.
What was going on was that the random process that was being interacted with was somehow having its probabilities altered ever so slightly. So a process that ordinarily should have produced, and in calibration did produce, a 50-50 chance of a head or a tail, was now producing, coming out with results over many, many events, many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or even millions of events that had an inherent probability of, say, 0.503 or 0.497, depending on the intention of the operator to go higher or lower.
These deviations from chance are not terribly impressive. In fact, they're minute. They're like the residue of coffee grounds in the bottom of your cup, or less. So then you might ask, if they're so small, then why are they significant? And the point here is a matter of statistics. The chance that this small residue of strange results would be visible over a course of 1,000 or 10,000 trials is very small. Statistical significance is measured not only based on the size of an effect, but also based on how many trials and replications and repetitions have been used to measure that effect. And this is where pairs research becomes interesting, because the probability that the trends in their data would have happened just by the random functioning of chance are less than 1 in 1 million. So when we look at these tiny deviations over many, many repetitions, we can be fairly sure that we're not seeing a deviation due to chance, but that it is somehow correlated with the operator's intention. And if Pair's results are valid, they do not fit within our current theoretical model of physics. If what they have observed is true, then we need to find a theory that integrates that into our understanding of how things work. When John and Dune came out with their results, you can imagine how they were received by their peers. John spoke a little bit about this in our interview.
I had naively presumed that if a scholar of some credentials and pedigree set up a conservative and astute program of academic research, published the results openly, and involved other members of the community and access to the work, that it would be received more or less like other academic enterprises, where that has not been the case. It has proven to be an anathema to a lot of people whom I would have thought would know better. And I don't have a better explanation for that, other than that there is some fear there, whether it's a fear of being associated with a suspect topic in any way, or whether it's a fear about what our work does to the reputation of the institution, or whether it's a fear of the personal implications. You can take your pick, but there is a fear.